WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time of the week where we check in on City Hall and the Johnson administration. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Homelessness in Chicago is nearly three times higher than last year, according to the new point in time count. There's a new law about lobbying the mayor, and federal prosecutors are recommending a 10-year prison sentence for former Alderman Ed Burke. To dive into all that and more, I sat down with WBEZ's city politics reporters Tessa Weinberg and Mariah Wolfel. I started off by asking Mariah to remind us what Ed Burke's been convicted of. Here's Mariah.
He's been convicted on 13 counts of corruption, including racketeering, bribery, attempted extortion, and he was convicted late last year. And this is in relation to schemes where Burke used his public office and his power that he amassed over decades to strong-arm developers who needed help from the city into hiring his private law firm. Mm-hmm. So enriching himself or with other favors. And so this is, in a new filing last night, we found out how much time prosecutors should think he should serve for those crimes, which is 10 years, a decade in prison.
Yeah, what's their rationale for that?
So they really didn't pull any punches in arguing to the judge why they believe Burke deserves a 10-year prison sentence. They said he abused and exploited his office, that the fact that Burke is 80 years old should not stop the judge from issuing the sentence, that Burke used his age to his advantage. He wielded power and confidence over people he tried to strong arm. And they also said that Burke needs to go to prison to stop him from committing further crimes. They actually argued that given Burke's vast network of allies, and they even argued, including in the current city government and city hall, that Burke needs to go to prison so that he doesn't continue to try to wield his power.
So no special treatment, period.
Right. That is what they're arguing.
So then what are Burke's lawyers asking for?
Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Zero time in prison. And they say that this would be a powerful expression of mercy for the 80-year-old. Hundreds of people wrote in asking the judge for leniency for Burke, who's nearing the end of his life. And that includes his wife, former Illinois State Supreme Court Justice Ann Burke, who wrote a pretty tear-jerking letter saying how she can't fathom being away from her husband of decades. She said he's her best friend of 60 years and that she can't fathom being away from him at the end of his life. So many people wrote in about Burke's willingness to help, his generosity, which is one side of Ed Burke that we got to know during the trial, and that is a huge part of his character. But it's also a tool that he used to influence people, as prosecutors argued and a jury found.
Yeah, so the sentencing is on June 24th. Now, do you think federal prosecutors could get their way?
Well, I think that there is precedent for a decade in prison for city corruption, even under this current judge. Judge Virginia Kendall, the last public corruption case she took on, it was a City Hall insider who was implicated in a red light camera scheme, and that person was sentenced to 10 years in prison. And so I don't think it's out of the question. People in these letters are really trying to pull at her heartstrings and appeal to his age. And so we'll see how the judge factors that into her decision.
All right, let's shift gears, Tessa. The city released results of its annual point in time homelessness count, which they say it shows that homelessness has nearly tripled from last year in Chicago.
What can you tell us about how the measurement works and what it found?
Yeah, so the count found that there was more than 18,800 people who experienced homelessness.
And to be clear, the count was done in January.
Yes, yeah, so this was done back in January.
And now we're getting the results.
Yeah, results were just released last week by the city. And it's called a point in time count because it really is just a snapshot of what the city's homelessness population looks like. And on a single night in late January, you know, they fan out, they survey, they're taking a census of how many people are within city shelters. And at the same time, how many folks are, you know, living unsheltered on the streets and encampments. And so it really is just a static, you know, point in time picture. But it's how the federal government defines homelessness. And so the city is mandated to do these counts annually, and it impacts how much federal funding they will receive. And so it found, yeah, the numbers compared to last year, last January 2023, it had increased threefold. And a lot of that was largely driven because there were, you know, more than 10,000 asylum seekers in January who had no permanent place to stay. But there was also an increase in longtime residents who
They're counting migrants in these numbers.
Yes. Yeah. And so migrants had also been counted in last year's count, but that was really before we saw folks arrive in the, you know, tens of thousands. So it was a much smaller number, only a couple thousand. Whereas this time it was 13,000 some folks who were just migrants who were included in that number.
And folks staying in shelters, migrant shelters are included as well?
Yeah. So both migrants staying in shelters and unsheltered. And, you know, one advocate with the coalition, Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, noted that even though we saw this huge spike driven by, you know, asylum seekers who have arrived to the city, that can really hide what was also just a really significant jump in the number of longtime residents who were also experiencing homelessness. That figure increased by 1,000, which was a 25% increase, which is also pretty hefty. Mm-hmm. And of that demographic, Black Chicagoans disproportionately experienced the highest rates of homelessness at 72%.
Wow.
And overall, if you take the whole 18,800 or so people, about 30% were children.
Oh my goodness. Mariah, after the Bring Chicago Home referendum failed to pass in March, what other efforts is Mayor Johnson making towards reducing homelessness?
Well, I think the main one we're going to start to see is our efforts behind his $1.25 billion bond plan. And, you know, this is a major effort on part of the city, and it would be split between the city's housing and development departments. And the city's housing department, I think, would really, you know, aim to use that to increase affordable housing, which is in huge demand in Chicago, and there are large shortage of affordable housing units.
Yeah. Let's get into some city council news here. Something on the agenda for tomorrow. Alderman Bill Conway has been campaigning for a legally designated quiet zone. This is around a women's clinic in his ward. He's been campaigning for this for nearly a year. What's the ordinance going to do, though?
So the main goal of the ordinance is to stop people from using, you know, megaphones and other sound projectors outside of the abortion clinic, anti-abortion protesters mainly, although this ordinance, as the alderman points out, would be a blanket. You know, it wouldn't just target people with specific goals outside of abortion clinics, but mainly just trying to create a peaceful and quiet zone for women, you know, going to get healthcare from the abortion clinic.
So does it look like it's really going to be up for a vote this time? And if it really does get a vote, will it pass?
I would imagine so, although we haven't seen a huge test of this just because it has been delayed. It's unclear why Alderman Nick Spezzato delayed it at the last meeting, although he is one of the council's most conservative aldermen and has raised First Amendment concerns. But I would imagine it could get a vote tomorrow, since the tool that Spezzato used to delay it last time only pushes it until the next meeting, and that tool can only be used once as a parliamentary maneuver. And so I do imagine that we'll see a vote on this.
Tessa, there's a new law that passed last month in New York City. Now, it prohibits the sale of certain types of lithium-ion batteries that are used in e-bikes and scooters. Now, a city council committee just advanced a similar ordinance here in Chicago. What's up with these batteries?
Yeah, so this will be likely up for a vote tomorrow at the full city council. And the reason why they're wanting to pass these restrictions so that these batteries meet safety regulations is because they can cause, you know, really deadly fires that, you know, when officials described at the hearing. They said they're more like explosions.
On scooters?
These lithium batteries can be found in electric scooters, electric bicycles, but also things like cars and phones. As the proliferation of batteries in products, you know, as that's increased, the batteries have gotten smaller and therefore are more powerful. There are now, these batteries have been a leading cause of fires in New York City, and they've led to over a dozen deaths last year. Mm-hmm. And so Chicago alderpersons are seeing that and wanting to be more proactive, make sure there's similar restrictions in place. So basically uncertified batteries are not being sold in the city. And Chicago's not seeing the scale of fires like New York has, but there have been a couple of recent examples where, you know, there was a house fire explosion in the suburbs that had $150,000 in damage. And they said it was because of a lithium battery in a e-bike that was charging, and that's what caused it. So they're really trying to, you know, be proactive and try to prevent this from happening in
Chicago. Does it seem like there's a consensus here?
Yeah, you know, at the hearing, folks didn't really speak against this. The alderperson who has sponsored it has stressed that it won't affect, for example, like Divvy bikes in the city. Mm-hmm. And so they're really trying to tackle unregulated or kind of improper uses of these batteries.
All right, moving on to another piece of city council legislation, Tessa, there's election reform news, right? So catch us up on this ordinance that's prohibiting lobbyists from donating to a mayoral campaign.
Yeah, so just last week, the city council's ethics committee advanced an ordinance that appears to be, you know, something that the mayor opposes. So it was pretty striking to see them move this forward. And it would basically close this loophole in enforcement of a executive order that Mayor Rahm Emanuel had signed on his first day in office. Mm-hmm. And the intent of the executive order is to say lobbyists cannot be donating to a mayor's campaign. But it wasn't until recently that the Board of Ethics discovered they actually can't enforce that. They need it written in statute, according to a legal opinion they got.
Oh, okay.
And so this ordinance that the City Council Ethics Committee passed is to close that, and lobbyists would be fined three times the amount of their improper donation to the mayor if it wasn't returned within 10 days after it was made and discovered. And then later violations, subsequent ones, could face 90-day suspensions. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of also expanding the intent of the executive order by applying it to entities that a lobbyist has a 7.5% ownership stake in that they've also lobbied on behalf. And it would also extend to donations made to mayoral candidates, not just the incumbent mayor. So it would really kind of level the playing field as well.
Yeah, Mariah, as Tessa alluded to, I mean, there are rumors swirling that Mayor Johnson's office opposes the ordinance. This is after the Johnson campaign was found to have been involved in 5 cases of improper donation and then refused to comment on the ordinance's passage. What's your take of all of this?
I don't think that ethics reform has been a major priority for Mayor Brandon Johnson. He did not campaign on that. And that's a huge shift from former Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who, you know, was propelled into office amid, you know, we're speaking of Burke, amid the Burke scandal, mm-hmm. and really, you know, made herself a name for, you know, trying to be this ethics reformist. And Johnson has not taken that up as a priority, so it's not necessarily a surprise, but I don't think it's a good look that after you have yourself been, you know, guilty of this, to not even comment on the ordinance. But it's also not surprising that politicians don't want to give up the power that they have. You know,
good point.
It's a lot to vote for yourself to be subject to these fines and fees of something that you yourself have been found guilty of. But I'm sure he'll be asked about it after tomorrow's city council meeting. And so we'll maybe get the first look at how he's thinking about this.
I'm sure you'll ask him about it. We've been talking with Mariah Wolfel and Tessa Weinberg, who cover city government and politics for WBEZ. Thank you both so much.
Thanks.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Jules Yeager, mixed by Micah Yasin, and edited by Meha Ahmed. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. We feature local stories and give out great recommendations for events in the greater Chicago area. You can find the sign up and our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.